Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
What's your favorite guitar? Because there are Les Paul Customs, Les Paul Recording Guitar. There are all kinds of Les Paul guitars.
How do you know that? You play guitar?
Yes, I play guitar.
Well, of course. That's the whole world is one guitar now. Don't you know that? My mother said when I was a little kid, I started to play the piano. And my mother says, I don't think so. I says, why not, Mom? She says, you got your back turned to the people. So I said, well, I'll play the saxophone. She says, now you got something in your mouth you can't say. You can't talk. So the harmonica went out. Then I said, I'll get a drum. Not in this house you won't bring a drum. So finally I went to a guitar. She says, now you're talking. Now you got it. From Sears, I got the guitar, and I opened it. And as I got it out of the carton, one string caught in the cardboard. It went, dang. Mother says, you're great already. I was on my way. And Mother says, no matter what you do, you sound great when you play the guitar. Try it on the violin. You want to kill the kid. He's practicing for 5 years on a violin. You can't stand him. If he plays a clarinet, it's rough. You play a guitar, it's great no matter what you do.
Yeah.
So the guitar has that magic.
But do you have a favorite out of all your Les Paul guitars? Is there one that you...
No.
Really?
No.
Okay.
No, I just... The one I play is happens to be one I like. Mm-hmm. I play it now, but tomorrow I'll pick up another one in 10 minutes. I love it.
You have a gift, too, that is a rare thing among instrumentalists. When we were watching you on stage tonight, you have a wonderful sense of humor. We've known that from our conversations with you, but we saw it on stage tonight. But your sense of humor is able to come through your guitar,
yeah,
too.
That's
that
right. You got to say it with your hands.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When that guitar laughs, I mean, everybody else laughs.
And you make it cry, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When a person comes in your audience, you see them with tears in their eyes, then you know that you're saying the right thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's terribly important what you can say with your head and your hands. And the more you play the guitar, the more you use your head instead of your hands. You only need to say one thing, one note. Louis Armstrong proved it. Count Basie proved it. Mm-hmm. And the Tommy Dorsey's proved it.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is hit one note, and if it's the right note. But how many notes can you pick to put there that are wrong? It's terribly important to play the right note. When you go over the House of Blues, to play the blues, they don't play a million notes. Mm-hmm. Play one note, and it's the right note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is the most important part about it.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at Chicago's WGN Radio 720. We're spending the entire show tonight remembering Les Paul. We've had the good fortune to talk with a lot of people tonight who worked with Les, who jammed on stage with him, and we've got roughly 18 years worth of conversations that we had with Les that Dan Chagrou, our producer, was nice enough to go through. And we want to share parts of those mm-hmm. with you tonight, too.
Sadly, there were so many times that we would call Les and someone's passing would have been in the news. And I'll never forget the night we talked about the passing of Gene Autry. He loved Gene Autry. One of my favorite stories is Les talking about being a kid and loving Gene Autry, not only as a cowboy, not only as a film star, but as a guitarist, as a performer. And Gene came to Waukesha to perform, and Les was a little boy, and their age difference was such that Gene was already an established star, and Les was just a kid. And he went to see him. I think it was a matinee. He went to see Gene Autry with a buddy, and he even remembered the kid's name that was with him. And they took a flashlight along with them because there was a chord that Gene Autry would play that Les could not master. So he had a paper and a pencil and a flashlight. And when Gene would play that particular chord, the flashlight would go on and Les would jot down the chord. And I guess this went on enough times that Gene Autry, from the stage, wanted to know what was going on down there. I keep seeing a light flashing. And Les said that was the first time he met Gene Autry, and they became very close friends.
Yeah, they did.
And that was a tough night after Gene had passed away for Les to talk about his friend. And I remember clearly he said, I've talked about so many friends who've died. And subsequently, we had him on the radio talking about, you know, the passing of Chet Atkins and people who were, you know, really genuine friends.
And we were always amazed at some of the people that he'd had the chance to come in contact with. That we talked with him the night Harry Carey died. And
we didn't know that they were friends. We just figured since Harry Carey had been in Chicago and Les had been in Chicago, and we had the interview with Les scheduled. And boy, he just he blew us away when he said, you know, back when I was hanging with Harry. And we said, what? You were hanging with Harry? And he proceeded to tell us wonderful stories, Les Paul and Harry Carey.
Harry Carey was a very dear friend of mine. And Russ Hodges. Russ and Harry, we went to WIND in Gary on New Year's, and we went to go out and on a good drunk. That's what we wanted to do. And we were heading to Gary, which we did. We got to Gary. And Russ Hodges had a date. She said, I'll be waiting on the corner by the bank. And so Russ didn't know what she looked like, but he had a blind date. And she was standing there by the bank, and we told her I'd be in my yellow Packard. And so when we drove and she saw us, she waved. And when she waved, her pants fell down. In her pants, she stepped out of them, put them in her pocketbook, jumped in the car, and away we went. And I'll never forget that New Year's.
I bet you won't.
Oh, no. Anyway, that night, we had to go back because we had to open up at the WJJD the next morning. IND and JJD were married. Atlas owned both stations. And on the way home, there was a wigwag going, and the snow was coming down, and it was a mess.
What's a wigwag?
Well, that's where it tells you don't cross, because it's a sign telling you there's a train coming through.
Okay. So you could sit forever.
Yeah, we could.
Okay.
And we waited at that wigwag, and finally one of us decided, where in the devil is that train? So they come back in the car and said, it's way down the line. So I said, why don't we go down there and tell them, stupid, back that thing up or something so the wigwag isn't messing us up. We were annoyed at this, and so we drove down about a half a mile, and there was a train, or a quarter of a mile, whatever it was, but there was no one in it. And there was a hole in the fence and some tracks going across over to the Dew Drop Inn. And the two guys were getting their snort. And so I says, let's move this train. So Russ says, well, you're joking. No. So Harry says, well, I'll follow you in the car. So Harry was driving the car, and we backed the train up. And I knew how to drive a train because I was born and raised right there on the railroad track. And my godfather was an engineer. So he put me in the train and along with the fireman, and I knew how to start and back a train up. So I backed the train up for about a half a mile. And then we got in the car and we drove on home. And we thought of it so often. Whenever we'd meet, we'd talk about that train, moving that train. Can you imagine those two guys coming out and say someone stole our train?
I'm wondering if they ever had another drink after that night.
Oh.
Les Paul.
Hearing that story again, one of the things that tickles me is, well, sure, I knew how to drive a train.
Yeah.
What? You knew how to drive a train? Yeah. And again, none of this was scripted. We didn't call him in advance and say, no, we're going to talk about Harry Carey. So when you hear him tell the tale, it's off the top of his head. He starts naming names, people, 50, 60 years before. Just priceless moments. I repeat myself when I say how fortunate we are that we had the opportunity to get him on the show.
Yeah.
And he felt comfortable enough to talk. I wonder if he ever felt uncomfortable talking. Because he just loved telling a story, and he knew he had a great audience, and he knew Chicago loved him, too. And
again, he certainly knew how to embellish a story. But there were enough times when we'd zero in on something, and he wasn't kidding.
Yep.
He actually did whatever it was that he just told us this wonderful outlandish story about.
And we just shake our heads and say, look at that. The facts prove it out. And he just, you know, we talked earlier about famous people that he knew and his love of Gene Autry and Bing Crosby. And Steve, you can recall the night that I didn't know that, you know, he would have known Judy Garland.
Yeah.
And I was just floored when he just casually mentioned that he went to the airport to pick up Judy Garland. And I said, whoa, the Judy Garland? Well, of course, Judy Garland. He said, to this day, I so clearly recall Judy stepping off the plane. And he started talking about the dress that she was wearing, the polka dot dress and the hat with the band of the hat that matched the polka dots and the dress, and how adorable she was. And I thought, wow. It was like he took a little picture and it just went in this album in his head, and he was able to just call it up at will. It was incredible.
There was another night that is one of those that will stay on our mind for a long time. Les was a huge fan of Paul Harvey.
Because his mother loved Paul Harvey. His mother, who lived to be over 100 years old, never missed Paul Harvey on the radio. And so he learned to love Paul through his mother.
And used to listen to Paul Harvey every day at noon in Mahwah, New Jersey.
Lying in bed, sleep in the morning, wake up, listen to Paul Harvey, go back to sleep.
And Paul Harvey, as he would be driving into work, would occasionally hear our conversations with Les. And this is what happened one night.
You know how you were just talking about Paul Harvey?
Yep.
Les, say good morning to Paul Harvey.
You're kidding.
Good morning, American.
Oh, my goodness. You're my favorite.
Oh, dear Les.
You're my favorite.
You have been a star to steer by for such a long time.
Well, Paul, I think you heard us say that today is a big day for Les because he's releasing his new rock and roll album today. We're going to get you a copy of that album.
Oh, thank you. I've been sitting here making notes.
I listened to you, and here's the rest of the story.
In fact, I got to tell you, Mr. Harvey, it was, I think, about a week ago you had mentioned Les in one of your noon reports. And Les, didn't I happen to call you just as you woke up to that? And you said, isn't that a weird feeling when your radio comes on and you wake up and you hear your name and it's being said by Paul Harvey?
Yeah.
Well, I've got to mention this new album today.
Oh, how nice.
First in 27 years, we've wasted a lot of years there.
Absolutely
and
right.
Mr. Harvey, the next one's going to be country and then bluegrass and jazz and blues. And
oh, man.
He's only getting started.
Well, we know you're terribly busy. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you all. And let's,
thank you, Paul.
As the politicians say, many happy returns.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye,
thank
Mr.
You, Paul.
Harvey.
That's, you know, after all these years, Les, we still have to call him Mr. Harvey. He's just,
he is such
a special man.
I guess I'm the only one that could get away with it, right?
And they had such a wonderful mutual admiration society. The album we were talking about was Les Paul, American Made, World Played, which was Les's first rock and roll album when he was 90, the album that he went on to win a couple Grammys for.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, when there was the wonderful Les Paul homecoming in Wisconsin.
In Waukesha.
And we had a surprise for Les when we were privileged to be a part of the show that night with Les. And we contacted Paul Harvey. He wanted to be there, but he couldn't be there. But he recorded a special introduction
that he wrote, which was brilliant. Oh, and I think everyone could hear in Les's voice when Paul Harvey was on the phone that he was just... he was awestruck. He was just kind of kind of giddy about the whole thing. And subsequently, when he celebrated big birthdays, Paul Harvey was so nice to mention him in the noon show, knowing that Les would be listening to him.
But I remember when we were up in Waukesha and when we surprised Les with that recording of Paul Harvey.
Yeah.
He was just about speechless, and for Les Paul to be speechless was a rare thing.
We were introducing him, so he was making his way to the stage, and I'll never forget when he heard Paul Harvey's voice, because in our introduction to Les, we had this recording. He stopped in the middle of the ballroom, and he just stopped, and he kind of looked up, as people will do when they're listening, and he looked up, and I thought, wow, and he waited until the recording was done before he continued walking up to the stage. And he just looked at us and he mouthed, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
It was really, really sweet.
Yeah, there was a real mutual admiration society.
I like to think, you know, forgive me for this, but I like to think of them together, finally meeting and sharing notes and kibitzing, and because they both had so much in common in that they had this love for life. They were so inquisitive. They were consummate professionals,
mm-hmm.
great storytellers. And yeah, in my head, I always imagined just the two of them having an opportunity to just sit down and, you know, have a glass of wine, a cold beer, a cup of coffee, just something so they could just chat with each other.